everybody. Welcome to another episode of Crew 3 Podcast. I'm your host, Chris. With me this week, it is Ricky. Ricky, how you doing, buddy?
Doing pretty good. I'm doing real good, actually.
Yeah, real good. I should introduce you. Sorry, let me back up real quick. Let me not as Crew 3 Ricky, as RCQ winner Ricky. You know, well, El Champion, El Jefe.
I was reading the script, you know?
Yeah.
And I realized that, this was the last chance to qualify. So
yes,
it's time to stop sandbagging and just win these things, you know?
Right. Exactly right. Yeah, yeah. So, the drama train's over.
You know, I took inspiration from one of my sports heroes' brothers.
Yeah.
Eli Manning.
Eli Manning, yeah.
I took my losses early.
Yeah,
lost
right,
in round
right.
two to come back from the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's the
and
secret,
win it all.
You know? Give them the old twist and turn, you know.
Yep,
no more.
Well, we are for one more week without our fearless leader Ruckman. You would think that moving items a total of 500 feet would be an easy task. However, as it turns out, they keep finding entire batches of things missing when all they did was go from one place in their same spot to the other one. So, you know, shout outs to him. Prayers for him. Hopefully
there was no upstairs. It was all downstairs too, right?
It was all downstairs. Yeah, right, right. It was all downstairs. Yep. Somehow, some way things got broken, missing, all kinds of stuff. So he's out there in the trenches right now trying to get that resolved. So we're out here delivering you the most electrifying podcast in Pioneer.
Right,
Entertainment,
right, right.
You know,
yeah.
We have an absolutely banger episode today. We've got absolutely a banger episodes coming up the next 2 weeks. Ricky, next week we start our meta boot camp, okay, where Pioneer season's right around the corner. We're going to get you set up with all the questions, all the answers to those questions, and we've already got people popping off in the Discord asking us questions. They're great questions. Even if you don't ask a question, your question might be answered because there's already such great, great contributions from our Discord members. We're going to do 1 or 2 weeks of that on top of spoilers because there's already so many great questions. Get you primed for sideboarding. How do you play test correctly? A popular question we've got. And I think that most people out there are play testing wrong, especially if you're newish to the game, which a lot of people are, or a pioneer. I think you're going to want to hear some insights on, you know, philosophical difference in what you're doing now.
And what's like to come.
Ricky, you got a smile on your face.
You sound like a newscaster. You're like, play testing. You could be doing it wrong, and it could be killing you. More at 11.
He's exactly right.
It's in your water.
It's in your water. It's right. It's in the plants. It's in the plants. It's coming for you, you know?
I'm just
what's
happy
coming for
to
you?
Have 2 weekends of non-competitive magic and how I will fill them with competitive magic anyways.
That's exactly
right.
Look,
you're
exactly
supposed
right.
to go easy at the pre-release, but I've never
That's
I've
right.
never gone easy. I mean – our pre-release is even having a cowboy contest.
Yeah.
Like, you win if you play the best magic, but you also win if you dress up as the best cowboy.
Ooh. Okay.
You know.
That's interesting. You know, that's going to be a fun
week.
You know
boots.
Who's not? You got your boots? Yeah.
I got a bolo tie.
Mm-hmm. You got
I
a bolo
don't
tie?
Own a cowboy hat.
Well. I happen to have a cowboy hat, Ricky. I remember somebody was making fun of us going, why did you guys buy cowboy hats?
Why?
Bucky's.
You think that it was stupid that you bought cowboy hats.
Oh, okay.
If you had gone to any cowboy boutique.
Reputable cowboy hat dealer.
However, Boosie's in the middle of, I don't know, Katy, Texas.
Wherever we were at,
yeah. Whichever Bucky's we were at. It's not where I'm like, oh man, I hope they have cowboy hats in there.
True. They had a solid cowboy wear section. They had the belt buckles, you know? They had the cowboy hats.
Like I trust Bucky's to give me like pretty decent barbecue,
mm-hmm.
a really clean bathroom experience.
Right.
And a live, laugh, love printed on a cast iron skillet.
But you know it.
I'm not out here looking for authentic wrangling wear, you know?
Fair enough. You know who's going to be putting on those skies moving to Texas?
Who?
Shohei Ohtani. That man is that man is looking Ooh. For an out. Let me tell you something. I don't know.
That would be the craziest. I mean, I'm upset that opening day is on a Thursday.
Yeah.
You know, man, I want to go up there and support my Rangers.
Right. Yeah. If you don't know, it does look like baseball's number one star may have been involved in a massive illegal betting scandal, but you know, allegedly, right? There's no for sure yet. Just cause his interpreter says that he did it and then immediately recanted that story when they realized that wasn't a good line. Does not mean.
I think that there's literally too much money
resting
on Ohtani's shoulders.
Right.
To be kicked out of the league.
This is fair. They got Pete Rose. You know what I'm saying? That's my only thing. But yeah, I think that Ohtani may be too big to fail. You know what I'm saying?
I think the entire GDP of California will drop if he gets
removed. That's true. That's exactly right. Yeah. Japanese stocks take a massive hit. You know,
your Dodgers jerseys worthless overnight.
Right. The world economy can't afford for Ohtani to go to prison. You know,
exactly.
Yeah, that's fair. That's exactly fair. Well, listen, not only do we have some hot episodes coming up for you these next 2 weeks, we've got an exciting episode today. Ricky threw out an amazing challenge for us that we love, which was let's pick some Crew 3 Pioneer Challenger decks. And that is what we've got for you today. Even our fearless leader, Ruckman, has sent one in from the barrels of under 1,000 boxes and is going to record a segment for us, which we'll throw in when it's time for his deck on what his thought process was, and then we'll talk about it. And then, of course, spoilers have come out. They are starting. They are exciting. This set looks exciting. Ricky's hyped about it.
As the children say, yee-haw.
Yippee-ki-yay, mother trucker.
Exactly right.
So, yeah, we're excited for this set. Y'all have put some spoilers for us to go over. The top cards that y'all think Crew 3 would be interested in. Of course, in the last couple hours, we've got some more cards spoiled. Ricky's got his favorites he wants to go over, so we'll finish off the show with that. We got a lot to talk about. As always, I got to start off by thanking all of you for listening to this show and letting you guys know that if you would like to support us, we, of course, have a Patreon. We, of course, have an TCG affiliate link. If you go to crew3mtg.com, that'll redirect you to TCG Player, cards that you were already going to buy anyway. Your boys can get a small cut so we can keep doing what we do. And as long as you buy while you're in that session, that's all you need to do. There's no input code, nothing like that. That, of course, will help us out. Thank you guys so much. Ricky, let's start off with the Crew 3 Pioneer Challenger decks. So who should go first?
I'm just going to say
the challenge. Break down the challenge.
It's been like a year. The last ones were in 2022, right? So it's been 2 years.
Sounds right.
Yep. Since we've gotten Pioneer Challenger decks again. And I think they're a good idea. And I'd like to see them continue to come out. So I thought we'd just sort of take a stab at the dark of what you could do with the restrictions that appear to be in place with the Challenger decks. So I analyzed all of the standard and all of the Challenger decks.
Yep.
Ran the numbers. And those numbers said that on average, each deck contains about 2 mythics and 24 rares, regardless of the price of those cards for the most part, and does not use any cards that were printed in the previous 2 sets upon the release of the product.
Right.
There's also kind of weird rules about double-faced cards, but that's just too complicated and too finagly, so I said, heck it. You can play all the double-faced cards you want in this. So, boom. With those rules, I tasked my co-hosts and myself to come up with interesting starting points to Pioneer. Now, there's technically not a budget, but there is a wild card budget of 2 mythics and 24 rares. So technically, if these cards are on Arena, these are good entry points for low-ish entry point to Explorer. But for the most part, we're thinking Pioneer. We're thinking what could be viable in Challenger decks if they come out again this fall. We hope they do. Let's send it over to Ruckman. Let's hear what Ruckman has to say.
Yeah, Ruckman, break your deck down for us, and then we will go over it.
All right, what is going on, everyone? Ruckman back here with, again, remote recording my bit after the fact. Thankfully, we are moved into our new apartment. There's still a lot of unpacking to do, as you can see behind me in the video version, which hopefully the video version will be back this week, now that I have a working office again. So excuse the boxes. Hopefully, by next episode, I'll have a little more of a presentable office. Probably not, though. It's going to be messy here for a few weeks. But anyway, I should be back next week's episode, which we're super excited for, the Metagame Bootcamp to come back. But I, of course, did take some time to record, pretty soon as I got my desk set back up, actually, to record for you all me going over my decklist for Ricky's Challenger Deck Challenge. Now, I did break the rules just slightly. My decklist is it in Seoul? And I did feature 6 cards from Lost Caverns of Ixalan, just because I do think that these decklists, if they were to actually be made, would have looked at the Pro Tour Chicago results, and we would probably see these in a fall release rather than they're releasing right now. That's kind of my mental gymnastics on how I cheated just a little bit by cheating in 6 new Lost Caverns of Ixalan cards. I did, however, meet Ricky's 24 rare to mythic kind of cap requirements. And so yeah, enough of that. Let's just talk about the decklist, shall we? So like I said, this decklist is it in Seoul? Surprisingly, with Ricky's requirements, we were able to hit very close to what I would consider the stock post-Pro Tour Chicago is it in Seoul decklist. So we're going to get 4 Combat Courier, 2 Inti Shenasal of the Sun, 3 Reckless Bushwhacker, 4 Spyglass Siren, 4 Voldaren Epicure, 4 Gleeful Demolition. So again, we're going to be that go-wide new current post-Chicago build of the decklist. 4 Shrapnel Blast, 2 Spell Pierce, 3 Torch the Tower. Shrapnel Blast, of course, some immediate end the game 5 damage. Also can be pointed at creatures. Spell Pierce is so relevant right now. I think Spell Pierce, these types of effects, I think, are very good for creature decks. I think if you are looking to play a creature-based strategy right now, I think if you're playing one that isn't one of the kind of, you know, vampires or Amalia and stuff like that, I think being able to play Spell Pierce, things like Spirits, are very good right now. So you want to shut down that turn 3 Soren and have some game against the control decks peeking around. 3 copies of Torch the Tower, just good, solid removal. Then we're going to play 2 Smuggler's Copters, the recently unbanned Smuggler's Copter, 2 Black Staff of Waterdeep, 4 Insult Artifact, 4 Darsteel Citadel, 2 Dead of the Bugbear, 3 Island, 2 Mountain, 1 Odawara Soaring City, 4 Shivan Reef, 1 Soaking Sun Crucible Defiance, 4 Spiral Bluff Canal, 1 copy of Steam Vents, because, you know, we've seen in the past, Wizards give you one. They'll give you one shot. They don't want to give you too many, but they'll give you one. They'll give you 2 copies of Hazard the Fervent, 1 Giganth of the Wellspring, 1 Mystical Dispute, 2 Negate, 2 Rampaging Ferocidon, 3 Rending Volley, 2 Spell Pierce to finish off our playset, and then 2 Unlicensed Hearse. So, kind of, let's talk briefly about my card selection choices here. You know, what I wanted to do is, I think cards like Inti and Spyglass Sovereign, again, were my kind of cheat in getting LCI cards in here. I think Voldaren Epicure and Spyglass Siren, having 8 of those in the deck are very important and let us cut some of the, I would say, previously seen as like trash in the deck, like your Ornithopters and stuff like that. Inti Shenasal of the Sun, you know, we could have argued, we could have taken some lands out of the mana base to have a better rare build by having a place of Inti and having a place of Smuggler's Copter. But in my mind, those are 2 cards that are very good and strong and powerful in the deck, but they are not intrinsically needed to make the deck function. So in my mind, this is me kind of trying to say, as a Wizards product designer, you know, we can add these cards. We're not going to add places of these, because we also want players to invest more in the game than just kind of pick up. And we want them to be able to pick up the deck off the shelf and have something competitive, but we want them to still keep investing in the decklist, right? So that's why we're only going to go with 2 Inti, 2 Smuggler's Copter again. That was a card that's powerful enough to be banned, so let's maybe not give someone a place of these cards. You know, they're strong enough that they will be able to see them. So that's why we're playing 4 Combat Courier. So we get 2 Intis, we can drop the Combat Couriers. That's why we're playing 4 Blacks, 2 Black Staff. A card that's not really seeing a lot of play anymore. This could be placed with Case of the Filched Falcon, or there was the creature that made an artifact into a 4/4 as well. I thought Black Step was kind of a good send-off to where the deck used to be. So again, if we pick up two more Smuggler's Copters, well, we get rid of our Black Staffs, we get two more Inti, we can get rid of two Combat Couriers. Now, the mana base, I think, is what I really liked about being able to build this deck and having a deck that is very common and uncommon focused in the non-land side. Let's just invest a lot into our mana base, which is something, again, we kind of saw with the Orzhov Humans deck list, which is a lot of kind of inspiration for what I wanted to do with this, has have an aggro deck list that didn't really retread on previous challenger decks that they did. That's one thing I wanted to do for myself, was my own personal challenge, right? But really easy for me is to rebuild spirits, kind of matching the new Renth builds, right? I just think having a deck like Ensoul is a very good FNM style deck list that someone can also take and find success at their local RCQ scene. I mean, heck, the deck I'm pretty sure top 16, if not top 32'd, the recent Pro Tour Chicago was on camera multiple times. A great show for the deck list, which is kind of what brought it back to the forefront of my mind when looking at this deck list. So when we're talking about the lands here, I think that's where this deck really succeeds. Because, again, looking at that Humans deck list, they've shown that they will give you a playset of Pain lands, a playset of Fast lands. And then, of course, we got our one of Shockland. The Humans deck list had two Mutavaults. We might even have a place of Mutavaults, actually. So having two Dead of the Bugbear here, easily in the question, right? We'll get another place of Darksteel Citadels. It's an uncommon, for goodness sakes. I think the other good thing here is we leaves us room to reprint the Kamigawa Channel lands. Of course, you know, Odawara and Baseju are very, very expensive right now. Sokinzon, Takanuma, Iganjo, they're still sitting around $5, but Odawara being, you know, $20-$30, Baseju being $30-$50. These are kind of the big reprints for the decks, in my opinion. I think, you know, if we could put a Baseju in another deck list that Wizards also puts at the same time, you know, these decks always have kind of one big expensive chase card in them. We've seen things like Brazen Borrower, we've seen Thoughtseize. So having one of those big hits that takes up almost effectively half the price, we think of these decks being sold for like $50, I mean, that's really good. You get a hole in the deck besides that. As for the sideboard here, it's pretty straightforward. I just kind of took a look at some of the other deck lists that were playing the similar Ensoul builds, and then taking what I really liked out of their sideboards here. Hazret, I think, is a great use of our mythics. Nothing too crazy of a reprint, right? Hazret's not an expensive reprint either, but it's very strong, very powerful, especially if we're into some grindier matchups. We get to play powerful companions against the Wellspring. All in all, I think this deck list does what a challenger deck is set out for and kind of set to do. They're a great introductory product that gets the player involved, get them into the format, and then they can take some parts of this deck and kind of push them further in the far, right? You get this, you get your Steam Vents right. Well, now you can go look at building in a Phoenix and things like that. If you had the Phoenix decklist, you have this decklist, you have a lot of good options. So I think that this decklist succeeds at kind of doing what the challenger deck wants, and while also being a deck that they haven't done before, and also kind of fills a fun niche role in the format. So I want to briefly kind of talk about something else I've been thinking about, and I think this really shows a lot of, if you look at kind of the card breakdown, right, a fully completed Ensoul deck is about $200. So this version, I think, priced out at like $150, $160. So not the worst, and I mean, you know, if we start thinking about 80s business mantras, you know, our Gordon Gekas of the world, greed is good. You know, I think having a decklist like this that's very complete on the shelf next to some of the decks that are a little more, I would think, pieces are missing from if we looked at other challenge decks. Like, right, like, you're not getting all of Rakdos midrange into one of these deck lists. You know, maybe they could reprint a Shieldred into one of them, which would be really insane. But, you know, I don't see corporate 80s business magnets of the world giving us that much value. So I think a $50 deck list here, kind of representing a... Well, the dogs are going crazy, so I better go. But enough of me talking about 80s business structures. I'll talk to y'all next time. We'll see y'all next week. Bye!
Amazing thoughts, Ruckman.
Wow. What a character. Wow.
What a character. What a guy. You know what I'm saying?
Such bold statements about not only Pioneer,
yeah,
but late 1980s business structuring.
But life itself.
Really, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go over his deck.
Let's do it. Because I'm sure that he did it.
But right.
Let's also talk about it again.
I'm just going to like give essentially basic thoughts here.
Agreed.
One, Gleeful Demolition is a $3 uncommon.
Yeah, it do be. It do be like that.
So anytime we can reprint that, great. Second, I think this is just neat.
Yeah.
Technically breaks the rules with Spyglass Siren and Inti.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a very fun deck that's relatively, honestly, cheap to get into with Pioneer. Of course, the mana base aside, the actual cards themselves, the shell is pretty simple to acquire.
Yep.
Mostly commons and uncommons, so lots of room to put like rares into the lands and other things. This seems like a viable deck that Wizards of the Coast could put out.
Yeah. I'll be honest, of the three decks that we present today, I think Ruckman's is one that I was going to do, and then he did it first, and two, one that I think is the most likely of making it to a challenger deck. I think this deck is competitive. I think it looks like a challenger deck, right?
Right.
I think as we continue to try and put ourselves in wizard shoes to try and figure out what they could possibly be thinking a lot of the time, this is a step in the right direction. As you pointed out, this is good for the economy.
Right.
You know, hashtag stonks.
We need to reprint the Kamigawa lands somewhere.
Yeah, we do.
So this is a good place for them, right? Because they just take up one rare slot. Wizards also likes to, with these kind of like take format staples and give them as one ofs. We've seen like one of Thoughtseize, one of Shock lands quite often in these before.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see what the harm is in putting a one of Odawara in these, right?
Yep.
We've even seen one of like commander staples like Omniscience, right?
Yep.
That card used to be quite expensive, but like it was it a one of in the Lotus Field deck,
mm-hmm.
which was very nice. This looks like I'm going to FNM and I'm going to have a great time and I'm going to get me a promo pack with a free arena code in it, mm-hmm. and have a good time, right?
And we're going to start blasting. That's what we're going to do specifically.
Right. Shrapnel blasting.
We're going to be shrapnel blasting. Yeah, we are. Yeah. I'm personally don't like the Convoke style. You know what I'm saying? Like the go wide style version of this deck, but it seems to be the one that's kind of doing well right now. So, you know, we'll see where it goes.
I was actually like, I didn't see any mythics in this list. And then I saw the two Hazarets in the board as our two.
That make you immediately happy. Yeah.
It made me happier, but those are also like the cheapest cards in the whole. Hazaret's like $2. Yep. It's kind of sad. This whole deck.
Sideboard options here.
This whole deck, $245. I honestly think that this could be packaged in a box, put on a shelf for $50, and I think it would be a great buy.
Yep. We wait for going to 35, you know?
That's right. On Amazon, you get all four of them for like 120, and mm-hmm. Jeff Bezos, you know, kisses you on the cheek a little bit, you know?
But, ooh, creepy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for those prices, you know?
For those prices, exactly right. Things I like about this board here, right? We've got Rampaging Ferocidon to stop the Amalia Menace, you know?
That card's gone up in price quite a bit, too. And, like, its reprint was not really a reprint because it was kind of that weird special guest card slot.
Yes. Which it was too special of a guest.
A box or something?
Right. Too special of a guest, in my opinion, right?
Right.
We've got some unlicensed hearths. You know, obviously we want our hate cards to be in artifact form if we can, such that when we, you know, if our opponent's going to destroy them, we'll just throw them at our opponent instead. Or obviously we just want artifacts energies, you know? Should we know Spell Pierce, always classic?
Mm-hmm. Spirebluff Canal seems reasonable at this point, especially because the reprint that was just announced today that we'll talk about in a little bit. But all in all, this seems like a great understanding of the assignment.
Agree. I think Ruckman knocked it out of the park here. Great job, Ruckman.
Now, I went a little greedy.
Okay. You sure you don't want to go last? It was your challenge. You want to go next?
I'll go. You can go next.
It's up to you.
I'll go now. I'm gonna talk about my very greedy $309 stack of cards that I want Lucky to sell me for $50, you know?
Let's see it. Let's see it.
All right. I think that aggro decks are cool. They're great ways to enter the format, right?
Yep.
But that's not like exciting as an entry point always for everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, it seems like every cycle of these, we get like two aggro decks in the set. And I didn't want to make another aggro deck. I wanted to challenge myself to somehow, with these constraints, build a functioning combo deck.
Yeah.
And by doing that, I kind of bent a couple of edges of the rules a little bit. It's not unheard of. They're still near mint.
You know what I'm saying? It's not mint condition. But it's now, it's a near mint. You know, maybe an LP.
I'm not casting company on my upkeep, you know. We're not that
right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I figure, you know, Kamigawa's out of print. And we really want to get people in on this Pioneer format. And let's just play. What's the harm of three mythics, right?
What's the harm in that?
So we're playing Creativity Transmogrify.
Yeah, we are.
Of course, Indomitable Creativity being a mythic, we can't make this be the like linchpin of the deck entirely if we can only put two copies in. So we needed a little extra with Transmogrify. Transmogrify is seeing new light these days, actually, with some Rakdos builds. So I kind of wanted to like step into the shoes of like these came out right after Thunder Junction, and you can look back at the LCI cards and the MKM cards that we couldn't put in and easily slot in those cards, right? We did splurge for an extra mythic with an Atraxa the Grand Unifier, just one, and two Hullbreaker Horror. These are the cards that we're going to kind of cheat into.
Mm-hmm.
Hullbreaker Horror does see some play in existing Creativity decks right now in Pioneer.
Especially in the sideboard. I mean, sideboard. A lot of people have forgotten about the Hullbreaker Horror, but that card, you know, it ends games. It is very, sure very does. Strong.
Cannot be bounces countered.
Stuff. Yeah. Yep, stops you from playing stuff.
Our main core of the deck is mostly commons with like Big Score, Fiery Impulse, which is due for a reprint, honestly. Impulse, Make Disappear, Volcanic Spite, and then we put two Prismari Command, important for making the treasures, important for filtering the hand. Just a nice card to have.
Yep.
Two Flip the Switch, because we really need less artifact and more creatures, because we have the Transmogrifies. Originally had like Stern Lessons in this slot.
Yeah.
But Stern Lesson didn't really work out if we had to use Transmogrify instead of Creativity.
Ricky, so what does Flip the Switch do?
It, 3 mana instant counter target spell unless its controller pays 4. And then we create a 2/2 black zombie creature with Decayed.
That's crazy. Yeah. Ricky, how did you find such a card? How did you even know something like this existed?
Chris once fell into a radioactive vat of Midnight Hunt commons.
Yeah.
And Chris always digs the weirdest cards out of Midnight Hunt that I've never seen before in my life and tells me that they are the source of his power. The random 1 black instant that flashes back that exiles a creature and makes a decayed zombie.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that was like, you know, Chris's mentor. That was his sensei.
Yeah. Okay.
Got him out of the vat, you know?
Got me out of the vat. Yeah.
Then we're going to get real exciting because we're going to give you not one, but two Fable of the Mirror Breaker.
Yeah.
We are. Staple. And not one, but two Shark Typhoon. I wanted to kind of go a little bit Yu-Gi-Oh on this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where what if you just buy two of these, you just have the whole deck.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. Like you have 4 Creativities, you have 2 Atraxas, 4 Fable, 4 Shark Typhoon. So like $50, it's a pretty good FNM point. And at $100, you know, maybe we're rolling up to the RCQ, right?
Yeah, maybe we are.
Now, in order to make the creature side kind of work, we needed a mana base that could support Dwarven Mine. More exciting in the modern version because you can fetch for it, but still playable in the Pioneer version. I would, of course, you know, maybe not play this if we're cutting Transmogrify and playing 4 Creativities, but for this deck, we kind of need Dwarven Mine to work. So we're playing 2 Xander's Lounge just because it's a mountain and 4 Volatile Ford. Again, because we need it to be a mountain.
Yep.
Though you could sub these out for MKM card Thundering Falls, which is a good card, and play that instead. Our sideboard, Our sideboard is a kind of a pre-cog sideboard, because technically these would have to go to print before LCI to like come out in time for the holiday season, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way Mark Rosewater knew that Tears of Valakut was going to be a meta-relevant card, but I do, and I can't not send you out into the world without two of them.
Yeah, sure.
As well as the new like discovery that Ashiok Dream Render is just the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep up the tradition of like one super exciting rare reprint in the sideboard, we have Narset's Reversal, which is like a $10 card. Could use a good reprint, right? And I wanted to give you one alternative big creature, so we put one Avoika, Enigma Goliath, in the sideboard.
That card is hot in the creativity sideboards right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a hot one. Did you just gloss over the fact that you gave us two Steam Vents?
Well, we really needed more mountains.
Yeah, yeah.
We could cut down to one Steam Vent to make this more realistic, and you get a third Storm Carved Coast. And
Ricky, Christmas. It is Christmas time in this fictional scenario. You wouldn't dare cut an extra Steam Vent away from those people.
I agree. It's for the children, you know?
It's for the kids.
Sokinzan, I was just like, well, it makes two tokens for.
Well, yeah, of course.
We got to, yeah, yeah.
We got to.
If we're going to do that, we're going to do Odawara.
Yeah, we are. Yeah,
so that's how we end up with a 309 pile stack of cards that I believe Wizards of the Coast should make available to the public for $50.
Yeah, can't beat it.
Are you going to see this on a store shelf for $50 and not just like throw Ulysses S. Grants at your local cashier respectfully?
No, you're gonna do it, you know.
Right. I'm just saying,
Watsy,
hire me. This will sell out.
That's exactly right. They can get that $20 from your wallet, you know.
Yeah.
Ricky, I'm gonna summarize I'm gonna go over your list real quick in totality. Okay.
Okay.
We got as we went over most of it, but let's just go over one at a time here. We've got three creatures: one Atraxa, two Hullbreaker Horror, two Indomitable Creativity, four Transmogrify. We've got four Big Score, four Fiery Impulse, two Flip the Switch, four Impulse, four Make Disappear, two Prismari Command, and two Volcanic Spite. To put those cards back on the bottom of our library. We've also got two Fable of Mirrorbreaker, two Shark Typhoon, and then, like I said, our 25 lands, including two Xander's Lounge, Volatile Fjords, two Steam Vents, which is hot, a Sokinzan, and an Odawara, as well as four Dwarven Mine amongst those 25 lands. Sideboard in totality to be looked at in the description. That is where Ruckman will post the deck list that we've got for y'all. So you can look at them yourself and fully go over that sideboard. Great, great deck, Ricky. I really like this. I think this is fun. I like Transmogrify. I like the options you got. I think it's a good value. I think it follows the rules. I think this was a really, really fun addition for the challenge.
So I would like to say that I think that me and Ruckman,
mm-hmm.
our decks out of the box would play each other and they would be kind of interesting games and there would be interesting back and forth.
Yeah.
I think you would kick us all with what you've done. With what you have done, I think you're going to just destroy us.
I've got to be honest in that this deck is all over Pioneer right now that I have made, and it is absolutely miserable. It's an absolutely miserable deck to play against, and of course, if you're playing it, you're just having the time of your life, you know?
Yes, let's make it available to the masses, you know?
Exactly right. Let's sell it for $35 to $50.
$35. These are $50 products.
We're selling them for $50 at your local game store to give your local metagame the bad guy, right? Somebody needs to be the bad guy. They need people to point at to say, hey, look, there's the bad guy. There's your
Billie Eilish can't be at every FNM, so.
Can't be at every FNM, right? Okay. My deck, as Ricky's alluding to, is the mono black discard deck that is popping around in challenger deck fashion, though. So let me start off with the list, and then we'll explain some of the decisions. We've got four Davriel, the Rogue Shadow Mage. If you don't remember that mistake from War of the Spark, at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, if that player has one or fewer cards in hand, Davriel deals two damage to them. It's a 3-mana cost card for 3 loyalty. You can minus one it to make target player discard a card. You're going to get, for my two mythics of the deck, two Liliana of the Veil. how far this card has fallen. We can throw two in a challenge deck and give it to the people in order to make this deck passable. We're going to only play two creatures, and you could potentially play zero creatures just to blank people's value if you want to upgrade particularly this into what I'll tell you is more Thought Seizes. But we're going to give you two creatures in Graveyard Trespasser, because if your opponent does want to kill it, they need to discard a card, right? So two Graveyard Trespassers there. We're going to play two Duress, four Go Blank, four Rankles Prankle, and two Thought Seize. Two Rankles Prankle as sorceries. We've got a Cling to Dust, four Fatal Push, and two Shieldred's Edicts as our instance. We're going to play three Reckoner Bankbuster, because it's some of the best card draw that we're going to get in black. Can also sometimes finish games, but really is just a sweet rare to throw in for renewable card draw. Then we're going to play the namesake of these decks. We've got four Shrieking Affliction and four Waste Not. So there will be no waste going on here. For our lands, we've got two Castle Lochthwain's, two Demolition Fields, four Field of Ruins, and 16 Swamps, adding up to 24 lands. Obviously, big decisions here. We can't just throw four Thoughtseize in a deck.
You're miserable.
We can't just throw four Thoughtseize in a deck. We can only throw two in there. Two is kind of stretching it, but I didn't play all the rares that Ricky allotted me to. I think I'm three under the cap. I'm under the salary cap, unlike the Dodgers. So we're going to give you that second Thoughtseize so that you can have stuff to do. We're going to only play four total one-mana discard spells, which does make this a little bit of an underpowered version. You definitely want four Thoughtseize, two to rest in the long term. Swap those Trespassers out. But we're just going to start going to town on opponent's hand, you know, very, very quickly. We also want lots of ways to exile their graveyard, because obviously Phoenix is everywhere. Amalia has ways to get stuff out of the yard. So we do want to maximize on Go Blanks. Also out of our sideboard, we're going to play two Ashiok. We're going to play two Dreams of Steel and Oil, because at this point, when this deck came out, Mark Woswater thought that Grease Fang was going to be the most popular deck. They didn't even see Amalia coming. They didn't even know that it existed. They were worried about Grease Fang. So they threw you two Dreams of Steel and Oil in the sideboard here. Your last two Duresses, two Extinction Event, two Invoke Despair, one Necromancia, one Path of Peril, two Ray of Enfeeblement, and the last Reckoner Bankbuster in the board. Ricky, like you said, when it comes to the battle of the Crew 3 Challenger decks, I won the competitive. I won the head-to-head. I think you guys won in other areas, but I win the head-to-head when it comes to decks facing each other, you know?
Like, man, I think Ruckman's only hope is that, no, you play Shieldred's Edict, so even the Hazoret's in the sideboard.
They have no hope here, you know?
Oh my god. Like,
we can make them sack stuff with Invoke Despairs on the board, you know?
This is miserable.
And we know what's coming.
Are you sleeping okay, you know?
No. I've been playing God Pharaoh's Gift and Ladder, and I'm like approaching Diamond, and I'm getting Go Blank left and right, and I'm just like, leave my graveyard alone. Stop touching my graveyard. I need that. I need that to do my dirty deeds, you know? So I just went to the dark side for this challenger deck and built Waste Not for the people. And people can have fun out there. And people's
FNM is such a fun, exciting time. Or you can just make your opponent slowly die for having no options with Shrieking Affliction and Davriel.
That's right.
Them every other turn, and then Rankles prank their whole life away.
That's right. They won't be laughing at this prankle. This is not a funny. This is not a funny prankle. You know. So full list will be in the description. Let us know on Discord, let us know on the YouTubes if this makes a video, let us know wherever you can who you think made the best Pioneer Challenger deck and why it's mine, particularly why it's Chris's. If you could do that for me, please. Thank you. Well, thank you.
There listeners. Are always four Challenger decks.
Always.
So I made a super secret extra second one.
Let's include the DJ Khaled another one noise right now.
That's only for those faithful people who go into the description and click the links.
Oh,
that's just for them.
You can only see it exclusively on the description, huh? Maybe we'll throw it in the Discord as well. And that way
we can get those clicks. We're going to get that engagement.
Get that engagement. That's the bait. That's how we're – look at us. We're content creators, you know?
Yeah.
Look at us going. Be proud of us, Ruckman. Okay. Well, we have a lightning hot start to spoiler season here with some sick
I'm going to bet.
What are you going to bet?
I'm going to bet 7 boxes of Ruckman's War of the Spark.
War of the Spark that are now missing thanks to his movers, right? That are been stolen by the movers, yes.
You know how, like, after, like, 2022, we, like, sat back and we were just like, wow, Neon Dynasty happened, right?
Yeah.
And that's still affecting Pioneer, right?
Right.
And, like, even in 2023, we kind of were like, Neon Dynasty is, like, one of the craziest sets that came out, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Channel Lands, yeah.
And, like, I think we're going to be looking back at this set as much as we look back at Neon Dynasty.
Wow. That's a bold prediction.
I think this is going to be as influential to Pioneer as Neon Dynasty. I think this set is insane.
Yeah. If you could go back in time.
If you could turn back time.
If you could do that, Ricky, to the previous question we got where one of the listeners was asking about the influence of standard sets on Pioneer, would you now change your answer? Would you now come over to my team and say that Pioneer is being heavily affected by the new cards because they're pushing these out of control?
I think Pioneer has always been affected by standard cards more than like a modern or something is.
Just you can run like for Congress now, Ricky. This is a great... You're qualified to run for Congress with this answer.
I'm just saying that I think
that's
the exciting part of Pioneer is that
the
format does not rotate, but the new cards coming out are always exciting and always shaking up the card pool, right?
And they're not usually free, but in this case...
I believe...
They're kind of free.
That my client misspoke and by gambling betting, you know.
Right, exactly. I've never bet on baseball. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's the important thing. That's the important. We're just going to start there that in case any investigations were to come out that none of this was on baseball. Hey, listen, let's start off with the second most Chris card of the set going in order of what we see in our Discord. Spoiler
so we're going
requests.
In the Discord order first.
Let's do Discord order first.
Okay.
Go down
we
since
like
everybody
our
was.
People.
Yep, and most people were kind enough to throw pictures here to make life easy for us. So card number one, Ricky, Slick Shot Show Off. This costs a colorless and a red. It's a 1/2 bird wizard. All right. It's got flying and haste. And it says whenever you cast.
Here? Oh man.
This is where we're starting. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, Slick Shot Show Off. Gets +2/+0 until the end of the turn. But that's not all. Wait, there's more. You can plot this card for 1 and a red, which will say you can pay 1 and a red and exile this card from your hand. Cast it as a sorcery on a later turn without paying its mana cost. Plot only as a sorcery. Please plot responsibly.
I think this is probably going to be like one of the best cards of the set. It's easily making my top 5. I think this card is unbelievably broken in Standard and in Pioneer. I think that even Modern, this could shake things up.
Yeah.
Before Modern Horizons 3 comes out in a couple months, of course. And I think this is almost solely because of the ability plot.
Okay. Break it down for us, Ricky.
I'm going to start talking about plot.
Plot it.
Plot. For red and colorless, I show my opponent that I have this card, and I leave it face up on the table in exile.
Mm-hmm.
For the rest of the game, if my opponent taps all of their mana, they lose.
Yep.
My opponent, I don't have to play it next turn, like suspend.
Mm-hmm.
I can't bluff it, like with foretell, like maybe I've put something bad down, right?
Yep.
My opponent, for the most part, with like very strange exceptions, cannot interact with this card that I've shown them. But this card has haste and will come into play for 0 mana. And then I will shoot off a billion cantrips or treasure cruises or whatever garbage spells I have to attack my opponent for like 9 to 13 damage in a turn.
Yeah.
And if I plot 2 of them, it's over.
It's Jover, huh?
If I plot 2 of these, like, so in Phoenix, just in thinking in Pioneer, thinking in Standard even, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Standard, it's even worse because, like, there's not as, like, effective spells, right? The card velocity, I might not actually be able to cast 4 spells in a row, right? But still, like, if your opponent has this face up on the field, next turn, turn three, if you tap out, they put this into play, they cast three spells, and you're going to take seven damage from the Slickshot show off in the air if you don't have a blocker. And if they're playing a burn package, this is a wizard, so Wizard's Lightning costs one. Mm-hmm. All their other spells are then going to cost one. So you could be looking at taking, let's just say, like, it's the best case scenario, it's Magical Christmas Land, and on turn three, you're going to deal 16 points of damage to them.
Mm-hmm.
With three variants of a three damage spell and this coming off of plot to attack for seven. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane, right?
It could happen.
So your opponent can't tap out anymore. They have to, even if they don't have it, they have to fake having like the fatal push.
Yeah.
And I don't have to play this card. I can just leave it there until my opponent taps out, or until I have the spell pierces or dive downs or whatever I want to do with this card.
Mm-hmm.
To contest whatever their interaction, they're bluffing, right?
Sure.
I think that's really silly. And I think that cards like this might like see a rise in like playing cards like Wasteland Strangler or cards that can interact with the Exiled Zone. I think that plot is very broken. I think that plot is an insane mechanic.
Yeah.
Especially when you give it to cards that don't have plot, as we'll see soon. But this is the most explosive, aggressive card I've ever seen. It is got all the right words on it, and I think plot makes it bonkers absurd. Buy now. Not financial advice.
Not financial advice. Few people love this card more than me, but my problem, you might be one of them.
What's your problem?
I have played more Kiln Fiend than anybody on the planet except for Holy Diva. Okay? Nobody's played more Kiln Fiend than me. That being said, one of the reasons Kiln Fiend is good in older formats is the existence of like a Mana Morphos. Mm-hmm. And while I think plot is close, my downside on plot is that I am paying mana for zero effect on the board this turn. And I think that we're now in a place in Pioneer, this is my current thought, where, again, we don't have all the plot cards revealed. So there could be some insane stuff coming, and I do understand that. But paying a bunch of mana for a spell later can just leave you dead. Because while the same token of your opponent can't tap out, you may have tapped out for plot cards. And that
your
could
opponent's
be no
plot
point.
Cards are going to kill you, right? If your opponent plots this on turn two, then can't plot yours on turn two.
You can't plot yours on turn two, right? You can't just plot back. So, like, plot's predatory on itself, like you said. Like, it's difficult to just tap out and do nothing, especially in current Pioneer, because there's going to be a Vein Ripper on turn three. Or, you know, you're going to get comboed out on turn three, right? There's a lot of things that your opponent's going to go, oh, great, you did nothing? Well, then here's my Amalia combo. You know? So that's my fear with plot. I hope that there's some stuff, because again, my dream here is to plot this turn two, plot another card on turn three, and turn four, kill my opponent with a Twinferno, right? I cast a thing from plot, I cast two more spells and give it double strike. One of those spells being a lightning bolt, essentially, with Wizard's Lightning, and opponent's dead, right? If we can get this to 17, you know what I'm saying? Like there's chances here where we're killing our opponent with four lands in play. If we get one plot card.
This thing has haste. So by spending two mana, you are affecting the board.
Yeah. I mean, no, you don't, because it comes into play next turn. You see what I'm saying? Like you paid two mana, so you invested two resources that are less scary
you
now.
You ever
want to
play this like blind on turn two? Just attack for one?
You could. You could just cast it.
I mean, you can. That option's there for you. But like this card, you just want to sit in your exile zone until you're ready to just kill your opponent. Your opponent messes up, and now they just die, right? Or like you're in a deep game and you draw this card, like Ledger Shredder. Like you draw Ledger Shredder late,
mm-hmm.
and like it might be helpful, but like it's probably not as helpful, right? But you draw this late, you just plot it, and you wait. And eventually you will kill your opponent with like two of these on plot. You go, okay, did you tap out? All right, slick shot, like opt, consider, you know, pick lock, prankster, treasure cruise, you're dead.
Yeah, they get big fast. I mean, there's already a strong prowess shell out there, and so I definitely can see taking that a little more mid range and making this here. We'll just have to see the plot cards, because, like I said, my thing is you can plot yourself out of the game.
Because I think that plot is insane. I don't think that Pioneer is at the point where I'm dying on turn three.
Yeah,
I'm getting behind on turn three.
Yeah,
but I'm not. Dead.
I think you're basically dead on turn three. Is my thought. I think a good chunk of the time, like turn three. Now again, there's some interaction games going back and forth for sure, but you can definitely, especially if you just do nothing for three turns. I don't think you can afford to do that right now on Pioneer. You know, but I mean,
Do you play Ledger Shredder on turn two?
You can.
Have you ever played Ledger Shredder on turn two?
Well, ever? Sure, I have ever played Ledger Shredder on
turn I'm just two. Saying, like, very I rarely. Mean, what's the difference, right?
Right.
The difference is your opponent can, who also left their mana up, right?
Yep.
To interact with you. They right. They see your Ledger Shredder and they go, oh, Fatal Push, right?
Yep.
They go, oh, Lightning Axe. Mm-hmm. You can't do that to this, right? You can't Spell True. Pierce this. You can't, like, I think you can Tidebind it because it's an ability.
That's a little more fringe. You know what I'm saying? I think it's a little more fringe. I think that, you know, again, I like playing... I like getting my cheeseburger on Tuesday and paying for it on Wednesday. You know what I'm saying? This is kind of the opposite of that. I'm paying for it. Pay a little bit in advance.
I'm and always get it. Happy to subscribe to Diet Coke, right? I'll pay $9 a month for a Diet Coke every day. You know,
the thing that I think is interesting about plot is that I believe that Cackling Drake counts it.
I think that this is the best card with plot that we've seen so far.
I think it's the best card with plot we've seen so far.
I think it's probably going to be the best card with plot. I think this card is going to be meta-defining and game-warping.
Okay, you heard it here first. Ricky's telling you this card, pick them up while they're hot. You know what I'm saying? I think we've seen them for like a buck or two right now. So not financial advice given that the card's so cheap. You know what I'm saying? So, all right. That was the first card that we got. Obviously, people saw it, thought of us. They wanted us to talk about it. Let's go over the next set of five from Boot. We've got Scorching Shot, Ricky. Your nightmares of Shieldred are over. The answer is here. Scorching Shot is a double red sorcery. Scorching Shot deals 5 damage to target creature. How are we feeling about that? This is
very, very good in Pioneer and in Standard. Very exciting that my red aggro deck can now kill Shieldred and Vein Ripper for 2 mana.
Right.
Without having to switch, right? Rose could kill Shieldred. Tears of the Valakut can kill, you know. This is nice to not have to switch back and forth. Nice, clean card. Super excited to see it.
You still got
to
pay your ward cost if you're targeting a Vein Ripper.
That's fine.
But I hear you with that. All right. Next card, Slickshot Lockpicker. This card costs 2 colorless and a blue. It's a human rogue. It's a 2/3. When Slickshot Lockpicker enters the battlefield, target instant or sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback till the end of the turn. The flashback cost is equal to its mana cost. But that's not all. Wait, there's more. It's got plot 3. So for the same mana cost as you pay to cast it, you can plot it and cast it later, of course, for free. So this card is our, you know, Snapcaster Mage... Bad caster mage of the set.
This card is less exciting with plot.
Yeah.
If this card could, like, plot... The problem is, like, once again, plot is kind of hard to cost, right? Mm-hmm. If this card could just be a 2/1 for 2 mana, no flash, and just be a snapcaster at slow caster mage, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the ability to plot it in case you wanted to cast something really big out of your graveyard next turn, right?
Yep.
I could get super behind this. However, this is randomly a human with 2 power. So that does numbers for some people, right?
Yeah, it can do stuff.
This, like, could theoretically come down out of a collected company and then flash back collected company, which is funny.
True.
Right?
I mean, you need a lot of mana to do that, right? You don't get to cast things free, but... For sure. No, I mean, I think this is interesting. And like you said, in that, like, you know, listen, if we've got like a Fatal Push and 5 mana Fatal Push cast, you know what I'm saying? We could already do that in Pioneer because we have the robot that does the same thing. The 3-mana 2/1 robot from one of the, Urza sets basically that came out recently. It does something similar there. But yeah, like you said, this is cute. And then again, if plot turns out to be good and we can afford to kind
this
of tap
out.
This
is not a good plot card. This is not a good plot card,
says Ricky. Okay, this is not the plot card. But theoretically, yeah, if it is good, you can pay three, do nothing. On a later turn, use this to buy back a Wrath, right? Like if you're the answers deck, again, you have to be kind of the reactive deck. You say, look, I'm going to get back one of these answers later and cash that. Let's move on. Mm-hmm. To it turns out it wasn't Ashiok the whole time.
You want to start to the Jace,
aka Jace Reawakened. Jace Reawakened is a double.
Call a little bit of a, you know, I was a little wrong, but I did call that this would be a double pip 2-mana card.
You did. That's exactly true. Yeah, this is
Jace. I don't think
this
anybody, is the star. Anybody had the Vegas odds on it being Jace?
No. No, nobody had the odds on this being Jace for sure. So this Jace Reawakened, a double blue planeswalker for 3 loyalty. It's Jace. It has the text, you cannot cast this spell on your first, second, or third turns of the game. Once you get into play, however, you can plus one it to draw a card, then discard a card. You can plus one it again to exile a non-land card with mana value 3 or less from your hand. If you do, it becomes plotted. And you can minus six it to do until the end of the turn. Whenever you cast a spell, copy it. You may choose new targets for the copy as a one-shot. Copy all your spells effect. As people have pointed out, unless you can cheat this into play, you can play this on turn 4, and then you can Valky on turn 5. So you can cheat 2 mana out of your Tybalt, which
is that's just sort of a
probably not good enough anymore.
That's just like cheesy and not like as exciting, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you need to do anything like that. This card's just good.
Yeah. It's a good value engine, right?
Like, I just like it's comes down on turn 4 if you want to, right? Yep. It lets you leave up 2 mana of interaction, right? It's some sort of blue-white or blue-black control deck, right?
Yep.
We can draw, discard, just get cards moving through our hands, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can exile cards. Maybe we exile, like, the thing is if you play this card for 2, plus it, and exile some sort of 3 mana card advantage card, be it pieces of the puzzle, be it divination or quick study, right?
Sure.
I mean, the really cute thing is to, of course, exile like See Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that what it's called? See the
whatever
see
the one beyond? That like if you cast it from exile, you draw 3 cards.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
But like you just put any kind of card advantage spell that costs 3 on this, right? Mm-hmm. In combo decks, maybe you stockpile your combo pieces for free.
Agreed, right.
Get them out of your hand so your opponent can't, and they're already paid for. But if you play this card on turn 4, plus it, exile any 3 mana card, you've now gotten your mana value back out of the Jace. This Jace has made 3 mana for you. And next turn you can cast that, draw more cards, right? Plus it again, exile another 3 mana card. Now you are a control deck that doesn't have to like use your mana to draw more cards.
Yep.
You're going to use your mana to interact with your opponent. And then on your main phase, you're casting your quick study, divination, whatever 3 mana card advantage spell you want to use for free.
Or again, I think you really nailed it on it. Where like this could be a combo piece on a, you know, a more control combo deck. Where like you said, hey, I'm gonna put this piece of the puzzle over here. I'm gonna put this, you know,
I'm saving it for a rainy day. You know,
yeah. This put this untap effect over here for extra mana. I'm gonna put whatever it is over here, and then wait till I get more mana to go off. Additionally, you can just keep plus one-ing it to draw and discard. You know, but like you said, it does immediately get you an extra mana by letting you plot a 3 mana card and then cast that for free. So you're up on mana. You've now got a planeswalker in play. And although the ultimate ability is not super strong, if it gets there, you're probably pretty happy, you know?
It's also whenever you cast a spell, so like it will double whatever your finisher is.
Sure, double Hullbreaker Horse, you know?
Right, you know. I'm just saying, like, the ultimate is something to be, like, afraid of, especially as you continue to, like, put pieces of the puzzle divination effects in exile.
Yep.
Now, like, your opponent has to come out and contest, because, like, if you get to, like, minus six this Jace and then double cast all your plotted spells, right?
Mm-hmm.
At a minimum, right? I think this card's really exciting. I think this card could be very good in a control shell, and maybe some weird combo shells that want to play a little more controlling. This could be the card that Demir Control needs to finally kind of get one up on Azorius Control.
Yeah, fair enough. Ricky, we've got a reprint of Torpor Orb. Torpor Orb, which I don't think is currently in Pioneer, but because I think the last time it was one of the original, the middling Phyrexia sets from back in the day.
This card's interesting. Oddly, does mm-hmm. not really stop the Amalia combo.
Yep, true.
Because while they do gain a life,
yeah,
they have other ways to just gain a life somewhere.
Right. Well, I think they can start to chain by exploring or
yeah.
Doing that. So
well,
like,
your ETB explorers don't work.
Your ETB explorers doesn't work, but like your map tokens, I think, are, you know,
well, how are you getting those map tokens, I guess, right? ETB or attack?
The 3/4 that attacks to make them.
Yeah.
There
are ways to do it, right? It's a little less explosive, the Torpor about. I just like having this for Pioneer.
Yeah. I think again, your main problem is let's stop pretending we have to dance around this. The reality is Haywire Might doesn't have an Enters the Battlefield trigger, and that's a one of in a lot of the main decks now. You're just going to get Haywire Might out of the game. But it is an interesting one. I mean, I'd be interested in seeing this for proactive things, where it's just like, hey, listen, WotC goes crazy. They unban Uro, and now I can play, a stupid five-color deck, and I can play Kroxa and Uro, and they stay on the battlefield,
Right.
I've got a 6/6 for 2 mana that now when it attacks, it does bonker stuff, right? Anything that, again, using this for proactivity is kind of the fun part of the card, to be honest with you. So next card, Ricky, is Dazzling Escape. It's a 1 mana white, costs 1 white. It's an instant. It's got Spree. Spree says choose one or more additional costs. You can pay an additional 1 colorless to exile target non-token creature at the beginning of the next end step, return it to the battlefield under its owner's control. Or for 2 additional costs, you can choose target creature, destroy it if it has the greatest power among creatures on the battlefield. So for 4 mana, 3 colorless, 1 white, you can do all that at instant speed. You can destroy the biggest creature for 3, or blink something and destroy the biggest creature for 4. How do you see Spree playing out in Pioneer, Ricky?
I get what they're going for with Spree, but it should be like shop.
Yeah.
Like I'm shopping through all these options to build my Burger King combo meal, right?
Yeah.
This card actually never can cost 1, but it does cost 1 in your deck, which is interesting.
Yeah. The people were talking about Micromancer.
Yeah. Right?
There's a 4 mana 3/3. Yeah, it can snag 1 mana cards, and there's cards that are Wraths, as we're about to see coming up, that technically cost 1 mana, although you can't cast them for that much. They do cost 1 mana when it comes to converted, converted mana value in your deck, right?
These are also like, I don't know exactly how these work when you get to cast them without paying their mana cost. So I'd like to know a little bit more about that before I make a full judgment. I think this mechanic is fine. I'm not like that. Like, they're flexible spells, but like they're not, it ain't doing it for me, What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, man. I think the cool thing about these is that the cost is reduced, when it comes to searching them up. But I'm just not sure. We'll have to see how some of these more Spree cards play out, Let's roll into the next one and let's see how these, kind of shake down.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. I'm not into that one.
Final Showdown. 1 white. It's got Spree. We can plus 1 it, so we can pay 2 total. All creatures lose all abilities until the end of the turn. We can plus 1 again, 1 more colorless. Choose a creature you control. It gains indestructible until the end of the turn. Or you can plus 5, 3 colorless, double white, destroy all creatures.
Yep, 6 mana Wrath. Yep. Instant speed, though.
Instant speed Wrath, Ricky.
Yeah, 6 mana.
Do we have instant speed Wraths right now?
Well, depends.
Even at 6 mana.
Settle the wreckage.
Yeah, kind of, right?
Yeah. I like this card. This card is good. It has lots of options. We can do a lot with it, right?
Yeah.
For 7 mana, we can wipe all but our creature. For 8 mana, for some reason, we can make our opponent's creatures no abilities, then destroy them all.
Yeah.
If we are afraid of death triggers, right?
The one I'm interested in is for 7, we can choose a creature we control and save it.
Uh-huh.
And destroy everything else,
Yeah.
That's the interesting thing for me is that 7 mana, I can save one of my guys if I've got something out, and do that. So this card's interesting. Again, a tutorable Wrath. It costs 1 mana,
Yeah.
So kind of interesting as far as that goes. Move on to the next one. We've got the Vaultborn Tyrant. This costs 7.
I hate
7.
This card.
You hate this card. Ricky's already off it. 5 colorless double green for a 6/6 Dinosaur here. It's got Trample. Whenever Vaultborn Tyrant or another creature with power 4 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, you gain 3 life and draw a card. And when it dies, if it's not a token, create a token that's a copy of it, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types.
Bleh.
Wow.
I'm green. I'm a big guy, and I gain life, and I draw cards, and when I die, I don't die, and I gain life, and I draw cards, and I play my other big guys, and they gain life and draw cards. I hate it. Yeah.
Who's the caveman? He's in there, you're in there.
Yeah, yep. Just, yeah.
Yep, 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 yep. I mean, the interesting thing here is, you know, I don't know, this is too cute, but if we blink this guy, gain 3 life and draw cards, we replace our blink effect, give it a little vigilance, something like that. There's some cute stuff going on here.
Literally, you know? He says, like, if you play any more cards, you gain more life and draw more cards. Like, this is what mono green needs. Like, you ramp into this, right?
Oh, wow. So you're right. So whenever another creature power 4 or greater enters the battlefield, you gain 3 life and draw a card. So yeah, I thought the gaining 3 life was it. It also includes drawing a card whenever you play other big creatures.
Yeah.
Wow. Crazy.
And then like all of our Polukrinosis and all of our giant guys, and like also it says when it comes into play, so like the giants that are on the forest, we can trade those in for more 4/4 trolls, right? Those will trigger this guy. I just vomit.
Yep. Let's move on to a card I'm real excited about. This is the Colossal Rattleworm, Ricky.
I think this card.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go on a little side. Wizards has wanted us to play the 4-mana 5/5 Trampler for rare and green with 2 green pips forever. They've given it set mechanic 20 million times, right? Scavenge. Mm-hmm. Yep. They've given it formidable. They've given it like a million different mechanics, and nobody ever plays the 4-mana 5/5 with trample in green at rare. So they're like, fine. It's a 6/5 now. Are you happy? Also, it has flash if you control
it. It's got flash.
And when it dies, it's a rampant growth, right?
Yeah, it is.
This card's exciting, but I just talked about a super crazy powerful green big dongus. So I only got enough room for 1 green dongus in this set, you know?
Fair enough. Listen, for those of you who have not read this card yet, it's 2 colorless double green. It's a 6/5 and it's got flash as long as you control a desert. Spoiler alert, it's spoiler season. Deserts are looking pretty decent. There's some interesting looking deserts going on here. As Ricky mentioned, it's got trample and you can pay one in a green and exile it from your graveyard to search your library for a desert card, put it onto the battlefield, tapped, and shuffle.
It's also important to remember the other deserts that exist in our format.
Yeah.
Like Scavenger's Ground, Hostile Desert, and just like the desert.
Scavenger's Ground exiles graveyards, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And also the colorless desert that deals the damage when it comes into play. The green desert that gives +2/+2 and trample. The white desert that gives +1/+1. You know, the black desert that gives 2-1 counters. We have a lot of good deserts.
We do. And there's some new deserts coming out. So there's a lot of hot stuff rolling around here. And that's also, that ability can be used at instant speed.
Yep.
Instant speed on that rampant growth.
If you know these guys, you can ramp at instant speed. It's kind of nice.
Yep. Here's a card that a lot of people have been excited about, Ricky. This is Honest Rustine. Okay. Honest Rustine is a colorless, a green, and a black for a 3/2 legendary human warlock. When it enters the battlefield, you return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand, and creature spells you cast cost 1 generic mana less to cast.
It needed to be a 2/3, so it triggered with Denly.
Oh, the Denly combos, huh?
Yeah, this card is the most honest, fair, and average card I've ever seen.
Yeah, this is a fair magic card. This is magic as Garfield intended, huh?
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think this card's it's interesting. The thing is, for 2 colorless and a white as a 3/2 with lifelink, I can bring my creatures back from the graveyard to the battlefield, you know? Right. Particularly like Athalia's Lieutenant or Athalia or something like that with higher impact. So like, I don't want to be casting my creature spells again. I would like them to be free. So like my 3 mana human creature, they right now end the game. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like we have a lot of powerful options there. They're either countering spells or they're, you know, X4s that make extra dudes. You know what I'm saying? There's all kinds of interesting things to go on there. So card could be strong. I'm interested to see what kind of like non-white humans decks might do. Right. I'm not sure this one makes the cut, you know? I'm not
sure it this one makes the weird cut. Legends humans decks.
The legend ones could be good. Yeah, because like your curve's a little bit higher maybe and it reduces costs.
I want to talk about this next card. This card is exciting.
Ricky, break it down for the people.
Make Your Own Luck is 3 mana, green and a blue for a sorcery. Mm-hmm. We're going to look at the top 3 cards for our library. We get to exile a non-land from among them. If we do, it becomes plotted. The rest of the cards, I mean, they probably go on the bottom or something in a random order. No, they go to our hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is, I mean, it is 5 mana and it's sorcery speed, but we are getting 3 cards and one of them we're getting for free.
Yep.
I think this card is dangerous.
Is this the Marvel that we've needed?
This card, I mean, Scheming Symmetry.
Yeah.
Is in the format.
Pioneer. Yeah, it's in Pioneer. Mm-hmm.
And we've got another card in this set that I want to talk about a little bit.
Yeah, we do.
Is a 2 mana Vampiric Tutor.
I think it's, I thought it was 3 mana, but.
I'm just saying, I think this card, we're going to make our own luck. We're going to cheat something into play that we shouldn't be allowed to. And otherwise, this card is just sick value. Like
the safe thing, Ricky, though, right? The safe thing is that blue-green, you know, they're not going to ramp. You know what I'm saying? They're not going to be able to cast this any faster than turn 5. There's just no way, you know? This is a totally fine card.
This card is really cool. I wish there were real guns instead of the weird Halo.
You don't want to take a stunner from one of these things, Ricky.
Yeah, I don't.
These things look dangerous.
But anyways, this card's exciting. It's really cool. I like everything about this card. I love this card for limited. This is so exciting. I like that card a lot.
Yeah, I hear you with that. Next one somebody posted, just because it's hilarious, is Holy Cow. This one is 2 colorless and a white for a 2/2 flash flying white common. When it enters the battlefield, you gain 2 life in Scry 1 with the super cute flavor text. After it passed by, the rancher swore that she saw hope shining in the pig's eyes. The pig also wants to fly, Ricky. That's your...
Yeah. So this does not draw a card. Moving on.
Does not draw a card. Move on. Ricky, talk about High Noon. What is High Noon? Oh,
I hate this card.
Yeah?
This card, I want to rip up every single copy of this card. I know my life is going to be worse because of this card.
You almost called this card. You said something about, like, you get one shot. You know what I'm saying? Like, right? One kind of effect.
I thought it was going to be, like, a wipe the board, and then each player can only play one creature.
Yeah, something like that.
But this is way worse. This is 2 mana enchantment for Rule of Law. Each player can't cast more than one spell each turn. On the plus side, Deafening Silence does the same thing, but only stops non-creature spells, right?
Right.
But that means at least I can play and activate my Ledger Shredder still. This True. Card will not let me do that. And no, then for we're some not. Reason, if your opponent's just like, I'm done with my stacks piece that's like locking my Phoenix player out of the game.
Yeah.
They can. Just says Lava Axe.
Yeah, they can just shoot you. They can just...
Pow. 5 mana, 5 damage to any target, so it can hit your face. This white enchantment can just kill you dead. I like the idea that somebody could play 4 High Noons.
Yeah.
And then just start blasting.
It's going to take quite a few turns, right? Your opponent may be able to plot you to death by that time.
Well, but, they can only cast one spell per turn.
That's true. They can only cast one spell per turn. You can activate as many abilities as you have mana, though. So for 4 colorless and a red, you can sacrifice High Noon, and it'll deal 5 damage to any target.
I hate this card, and Brazen Borrower's stock is going to go up in Phoenix if people start playing this stupid card.
Fair enough. Ricky, here's one of the cards I'm most excited about from
this
set. I'll
let you take this one.
For the utility. This is Aven Interrupter. This is 1 colorless, double white for a bird roge. What's that?
Interrupter?
1 colorless, double white, 2/2, flash flying. When it enters the battlefield, exile target spell, it becomes plotted. spells your opponents cast from graveyards or from exile, cast two more to cast. Obviously, this card has some downsides, right? They don't have to pay for the spell again. Whatever they cast, they got to pay two for it. So that you did tax it, and you do take it off. You do take it off the stack for a turn. So what I do like about this is that they did have to pay for the spell. What's that?
The thing.
Tell me the thing.
You don't actually ever give it back if it's a counter spell.
Because it can only be cast as a sorcery.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right.
You use this to like stuff like a No More Lies or something, right?
Well, the big thing is you stuff a Dovin's Veto.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Stuff Dovin's Veto.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, I guess.
Right.
Like, yep. I can't cast this, you know?
Yep. And again, the big thing about plot is you can't cast it that same turn. So if you get something like a Fatal Push, well, then, you know, you're safe from Fatal Push for that turn and you've got your guy. So again, right. If they have another one, it do be like that sometimes, right?
It do be like that sometimes. But
again, why I like this card is you get to delay something and they had to cast it. So like with a similar effect, you look at their hand, exile it, and they have to pay two more for it. But they're only going to cast it when it's most advantageous to them. With this spell, they've already had to cast the spell. So they've already spent the mana on whatever it is and you caught it. So
Right. Although
it's not the most insane effect, given that they only have to pay two more on a later turn, like you said, Ricky, it catches counter spells insane, right? This is just a straight up counter spell for counter spells. They're not ever going to get value out of that, given that they can only plot at sorcery speed.
Randomly, it taxes their exile cards and it taxes their flashback, you know?
Yep. And any other shenanigans they might be doing, good against Breach in Modern.
Right.
You know, things like that. So this card I see being really, really interesting, and I'm going to pick me up some copies because I don't know what I'll play it in, but I'm interested in the Hate Bear style effect of this. I like what it does. I like that it, again, stops on the turn. You theoretically get to untap and be ready for it another turn. So, okay, here's our first desert somebody's asked to look at, Ricky. Why don't you go over Arid Archway?
So Arid Archway is a land desert that enters the battlefield tapped. When it enters the battlefield, return a land you control to its owner's hand. If another desert was returned this way, surveil one, and it taps for two colorless mana. We're getting close. Spelunking looks better and better every day.
Yeah.
Each day we stray further and further from God.
Yeah. I think one of the interesting things I see here is I see taps for double colorless mana. And my mind goes to Eldrazi's, Ricky. That's right. Where my mind goes, you know?
It's a little slow. But with
what mom said about me when I was younger.
I think this is more exciting for like a spelunking combo style deck.
Sure.
Where it'll come into play untapped and we'll sack it to a Lotus Field and kind of be able to go off like one turn sooner in the spelunking combo deck with one less land, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of exciting.
Yeah, I mean, you don't mind cards being returned to your hand if you're doing some Slowgurk nonsense, right? Like, you're usually trying to, like, return a Takanuma or something like that to mill and get, you know, gonna get some things back. So there's some interesting stuff there for sure. So keep your eye on this card.
You want to play Slowgurk and Takanuma in a deck that plays a land that taps for double colors?
Of course, man. I got to pay those channel abilities. You know what I'm saying? I got to pay for them channels, you know?
Sautaro the Infiltrator is a 2-mana, 2/3 menace. Whenever Sautaro the Infiltrator enter and or one or more other creatures, non-token creatures, enters the battlefield under your control, if none of them were cast or no mana was spent to cast them, draw a card. This is super weird because this guy can only, like, he implies that he will trigger himself, but he cannot. However, he's a ninja, so if he ninjutsu'd in, I believe that would work.
Yeah.
And he would, but he doesn't have ninjutsu. So you'd have to plot him, but, and man, he doesn't plot either. So this card is a mess for sure, but it's exciting. The people who find this card exciting are going to be excited.
Yeah. I mean, this is a human, right? So the cool thing is it's a human with two power. So we get to Delny, you know? We get to Delny with our collected company. We collected company.
Right. This guy into play. This guy, well, he makes sure he says, and other. So like if he comes off of a collected company and another two powered creature, he will not draw us two cards. He only draws us one card. So like this card is just written to be like airtight. And I don't like that.
Well, I think you get two triggers if there's a Delmy in play, right?
If there's a Delmy in play, yes.
There's always a Delmy in play, Ricky.
Sure.
If there's one thing that we've learned here. All right, let's talk about Fleeting Reflection real quick. One colorless, one blue, instant. Target creature you control gains hexproof until the end of the turn. Untap that creature. Until the end of the turn, it becomes a copy of up to one other target creature.
Weird, cool, and the cheapest we've ever seen, I think, this ability. Well, Metamorphic was also... But this is instant speed.
This is an instant speed thing.
Only for one turn. It could be interesting. I don't have the brain power to play this card.
Yeah. I mean, cool stuff. If you want to, one of your random things becomes a Vein Ripper, you know, seems cute to copy whatever. The thing is, whatever you're copying has to be already in play, you know?
Right.
So and it does say target creature you control. So we can't instant speed have opponent's creature become a copy of a Saying and then, you know, whatever else. So,
but we can instant speed turn our Phoenix that attacked last turn into a hexproof Vein Ripper.
True.
To trade. Yep. That seems kind of miserable.
That seems fine. Our Phoenix has come back, you know? I'm fine with that trade.
Yeah, it just seems like options. A lot of work.
We probably have better options, yeah. But somebody out there is going to do something cool with this, right? This has a lot of things on it. The thing gets hexproof, you do untap it. So there's cute stuff to be done here, you know? Two mana, I mean, don't forget, what you're doing is you're untapping a creature and giving it hexproof. So there could be some, you know, effects there with abilities, stuff like that. So kind of interesting. Ricky, what does Bristly Bill do?
Bristly Bill is a card I'm actually super excited for.
Yeah?
This is a 2-mana 2/2 legendary plant druid. He's part of the cactus people.
Yeah, he is.
There are cactus people. Nobody is native to this plane, but there are cactus people.
Cactus, yep.
So we're not going to question that.
Cacti. Cacti.
Yeah, cacti mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. Landfall. It has landfall. Whenever land comes into the battlefield under your control, put a 1/1 counter on target creature. And then for 5 mana, we double all the 1/1 counters on all of our creatures. This guy is exciting in standard. I think that Hardened Scales fans can keep hoping.
Hardened right Scales, now, you say, Ricky?
Hardened Scales fans can cope all they want about this card. Mm-hmm. I'm just excited about this card for standard because I have been playing decks that exclusively play the new Capenna fetch lands.
Yeah, right.
And this guy is going to slot in amazingly in that deck.
He gets big. He gets real big. Yeah, you're going to be dead fast if you don't kill this thing. That's for sure.
Right. And then, like, you know, can spread the love around, right?
Yep.
I like this guy. Sure, very, just a very straightforward, straight shooting kind of guy, you know? Bristly Bill. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a little prickly, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But there's nothing wrong with that, you know?
He's got that tough exterior, but on the inside, you know?
Yeah, he's moist, you know?
We've also got Outcaster Greenblade, which is a 3-mana, 1/2 human mercenary. People love their human 3-drops, let me tell you.
When
you enter the battlefield, search your library for a basic land or a desert. Reveal it, put it in your hand, then shuffle. And he gets +1/+1 for each desert you control. Seems kind of standard gimmicky to me. But yep. I know that I got Denly Humans fans in the crowd.
You get the power of the gates, Ricky.
Yeah.
The power of the gates.
Right.
Other interesting cards we've seen, Ricky. We've seen reprint of the Fastlands. Specifically,
this is huge.
Specifically, these are the
Allied ones. The enemy ones. The Allied Fastlands were in one, and they added them to Pioneer.
That's right. Seek Rome Coast type situation. I know what you're saying. I'm with you now. So we get some reprints here, which is cool.
All the Allied ones dropped to like under $2. So like now they're like roughly around $4 a pop.
Yep.
These Spire Bluffs were getting above like down to like $12. They at some point in time in our Pioneer history, the Spire Bluff Canals did hit like $24, right?
Yep.
Inspiring Vantages are getting up there to like $12 each right now. So, I mean, I think it's just about time we get this reprint. There's some cool train art and there's some nice little Western art. I think I like the Western art, but I think the Kaladesh art's a little better. I kind of just like it a little more.
Yeah.
The train art is kind of cool too. But hey, if these all drop to like $4 to $5, then, you know, Pioneer just becomes that much more affordable and I'm all about that. Do you have any cards you liked in particular that you want to talk about right now?
Yes. The number one most extreme elimination challenge that yes. I am... Yeah, exactly right.
What card are you into?
Well, I'm sorry, I was looking for it, and then I was like, ooh, some interesting cards
describe
here.
Describe it. I can tell you what it is.
No. The card I am most interested in is Lively Dirge. Okay, Lively Dirge costs one black for a sorcery. It's got Spree. For an additional colorless mana, we can search our library for a card, put it into our graveyard, then shuffle. And for two additional colorless mana, we can return up to two creature cards with a total mana value of four or less from our graveyard to the battlefield. So for five mana total, we can entomb and reanimate four mana value worth of cards from the yard to the field. So people are obviously talking about Amalia. Hey, if I've played one and you've killed it, well, for five mana, I potentially win the game. Also interested in this in Greasefang, where what we really want to do is put our Parhelion into the yard and reanimate our Fang. Or for three mana, we could just go get our Parhelion and put it to the yard if that's what we need, right? That's a big part of the combo, is getting the Parhelion to the yard, and we have other ways to do that. So this card is probably the card I'm most excited for right now, Ricky. What do you think of Lively Dirge here?
I think this card's kind of cracked. I think this is the best Spree card I've seen, probably. And it's the only one that's like not a one mana card.
Yeah.
I like this card a lot, though. It can be discounted if you need it to be, because of so much colorless mana and its cost, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I like the potential of just like a five mana kind of I win button from Amalia.
Yeah.
Not that I like that. It's just something that is going to happen, right?
Sure.
I like that it's going to happen to me, and I'm excited for how my body is going to feel when I lose the game to a top deck Lively Dirge for the game.
true. Ricky, what are you most excited for?
I'm going to tell you, I like a lot of cards, but I'm going to bring up a top tier plot card, in my opinion.
Let's see it. What is that?
I'm going to talk about, it's a card, it's Japanese on the site, so you have to trust their translation for right now, right?
Sure.
This card is called Wander Between Worlds. I'm going to post it for you so you can...
I see it. I'm on it already.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is five mana sorcery, and it plots for six mana. And I'm going to start with that because it plots for six mana. For six mana, we put this card face up in exile. This says each player may shuffle their hand and graveyard into their library. Every player who does so draws seven cards. Exile, Wander Between Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot force your opponent, so this will not Narset combo.
Right.
You can if your opponent is very uneducated in the ways of the monk, but they get to choose to not wheel their hand if you have Narset in play. And I don't think this card does anything now in Pioneer. It might do some things in Modern, honestly.
Yeah.
But what I'm excited about this card is, like, this is a time spiral. This is a time twister, but more importantly, this is a time spiral. Time spiral being six mana that draws you seven cards, recycles your graveyard, and then also untaps all six of the lands that you spent to pay for it.
Yeah.
This we just have to wait a turn. And I think in the top end of a control deck or for some very exciting combo deck in the near future, some sort of storm deck or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
This card seems really exciting. I don't think we're beyond the possibility of being able to go like six mana, here's this, and then next turn I'm going to pop off.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, this screams combo, doesn't it?
Right. It screams combo to me, right? Especially because we're going to let our opponent have a fresh seven.
Yeah.
But this kind of card is exciting, and I'm thinking about this a lot in cube design. I'm thinking of this card a lot in like older formats, right? Where Time Spiral is such a sought after card in Vintage Cube, right?
Sure.
It allows like so many Storm decks to happen. And being able to take one turn off to be able to have, it kind of reminds me a lot of like if you've played Dominion, there's the card that lets you skip your turn to have a double turn your next turn.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of reminds me of that. Of course, you don't have to do it next turn. You can wait to whenever it is more opportune for you to do it. I think this is priced correctly. I think if this had a plot cost of 5, it would be disastrously good.
Plot cost of 5.
I think at plot cost of 5, this card is like too good.
It's too low. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I think at plot cost 6, this card is still fair, but it's going to be played in unfair ways.
Right. Yeah. I definitely see this as like, hey, while I'm popping off in a Lotus Field deck, you know?
Right.
Right. Here's my too. Reset. You know what I'm saying?
Right. You can go and find this with Ultimatum.
True. Yep.
Yep. You know, we've played worse cards. We played that card that drew half of our deck and paid half of our life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, or just on a turn, we have 2 Lotus Fields. Your opponent's holding up all this counter magic. You just go, I'm going to set this here in plot.
Yeah.
And then on my next turn, I'm going to play like Silence, and then I'm going to go ahead and wheel.
Yeah. Fair enough. You know? Fair enough. Ricky, we've got a sick, probably one of the last cards we're going to talk about here, but we've got a sick reprint of Terror of the Peaks.
Terror of the Peaks is a sick reprint. I don't think it's going to do anything in Pioneer because it's already in Pioneer.
Sure. No, yeah, it's not. It's just a cool reprint, you know?
It is a cool reprint. It's a very valuable reprint.
You pointed out to me that this card. The thing was $40, and that's why I was like, yeah. Oh, that's so sweet. There's some sweet reprints coming in the kind of epilogue sets here, too, that are interesting. I'm definitely going to be picking up the versions of Thoughtseize from this set, for sure.
We also got, I want to talk about a very, very cool, I've got 2 more cards that I want to talk about.
Let's go. Let's hit them up.
Hit the timer, right?
Okay.
Shoot the Sheriff.
Do it.
2 mana, instant, destroy, target, non-outlaw creature.
Yeah.
So this does not kill assassins, mercenary, pirates, rogues, or warlocks.
It only kills sheriffs.
Unfortunately, I think the Vein Ripper is a vampire assassin.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
In a more serious note, though, I want to talk about 3 Steps Ahead, a.k.a. the Good Spree card.
Okay. What does that do?
3 Steps Ahead is 1 blue mana and can be found off of Micromancer.
Mm-hmm.
It is an instant. And our spree options are for 2 extra mana, 1 blue, 1 colorless, we can counter target spell. So mm-hmm. This card can be blue, 1 counter target spell. I've played that card, unfortunately, right?
Yep.
It can also be for 3 extra mana, create a token that's a copy of target artifact or creature you control. That's kind of exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Instant speed cloning a guy, right? Especially like a Torrential Gearhulk or something.
Right.
Copying
Ricky, copying a god Pharaoh's gift, maybe?
If you want to.
I want to.
2 colorless mana, we get to draw 2 cards, then discard a card. So
also really good in god Pharaoh's gift. Just going to point that out.
Our minimum modes, right? Our minimum modes are 3 mana, draw 2, discard a card, which is not the best, right?
Right.
But I've played that card before.
Yeah, for sure.
This could be for blue, 1 counter target spell, which is not the best, but I've played that card before, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
This could be blue and 3 to create a token that's a copy of an artifact or a creature we control, which is not fantastic, but, you know, it's a cool idea.
I've never played that card. If you say you played that card, you're a liar. You've never played a 4 mana instant speed copy spell. You've never done it. Right. Don't lie to me.
I didn't say that I did.
Yeah.
But, like, this card gets really interesting in the fact of how we can find it in different ways, right?
Sure.
It gets really interesting in, once again, I want to know what the actual, like, when we get to cast this card for free, do we get to stack it all up, right?
Okay.
But, like, for 5 mana, counter target spell, draw 2 cards, discard a card, is pretty darn exciting, because that's a super cryptic command, right?
Yeah.
And I'm kind of into that, right? And sure. The day may come where I'm countering a spell and also copying a creature. I look forward to that day, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I never mind. I know why I like this card so much and why I'm drawn to it.
Okay.
I just realized it. One of my favorite things to do in Commander and in limited sets that have it.
Yeah.
Is loop Archaeomancer in some stupid way.
Sure.
This card lets me continuously for 7 mana counter a spell and then copy Archaeomancer and buy back 3 steps ahead.
We get to cast spell burst with buyback? Is that what you're telling me, Ricky?
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you.
We're running wild in the impact zone, huh?
That's why I like this card.
I've paid four mana to copy a creature before, Ricky. Specifically, I've copied a Conquering Manticore.
Yeah.
So,
with
the Splontertwan. So I'm excited to copy some Conquering Manticores and hopefully beat you at some limited tables again.
I think this card's just exciting. This is what a spree card should look like. The Train Heist is also good, but like only in limited. And it's going to be like the biggest blowout in limited to the fact where you don't think it's fun at all.
Sure.
But this card is exciting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any last minute thoughts? The set looks so sick and we've only been in it for 2 days.
Yeah. No, let's wait and see what the people want us to do. As you correctly called crewing creatures. I want to point that out.
I correctly called a Paul Bunyan, but this one's called Bonnie Paul instead of Paul Bunyan, and it makes an ox named Bo instead of an ox named Babe. Yep. And I also correctly called that there is a roadrunner with protection from dogs.
Protection from No.
I know.
That's a translation.
It has protection from coyotes, but I said it has protection from dogs.
No, you didn't. We said it has protection from coyotes.
Did I really?
I think I said that. Yeah.
I did say that it can't be blocked except by creatures with haste.
You did say that it had the ability that it couldn't be blocked except by creatures with haste. And that is exactly what this card does, Ricky. You called that perfectly. It does cost 3 mana to do it. But that was a Nostra Ricky moment of all time there. Last card, because I was looking for this card and couldn't find it. Now I found it again. There's a 3 mana Demonic Tutor.
The Greed, right?
Insatiable Avarice. 1 colorless. For a sorcery, but it's got spree. For +2 colorless mana, search your library for a card, then shuffle and put that card on top. So like you said, it's more of a vampiric tutor. You put it on the top of your deck, you don't actually get it. But that can be a good thing, because now that card doesn't get Thoughtseized, right?
Right, that's we can set up our one. Own Thoughtseize bug. I think the mode that people are more interested in, though, is that second mode.
The second one, for +BB, so for BBB, target player draws 3 cards and loses 3 life.
This is, unfortunately, the card that Waste Not needs that I hate. I hate that Waste Not is going to get this card.
Yeah. Yeah. The BBB draw, picking up 3 cards is going to be nuts, right? Because the problem with the discard strategies right now is that, well, you're also down cards. Your opponent could be down more, but they can just top deck and get around your shenanigans. You really need Waste Not to be there, or you need some other way to kill your opponent to be there.
This gains you, with Children in play, you gain 6 life from drawing the 3 cards. So.
Yep. Yeah, you sure do. So you're only down 3.
When you're just like, oh-ish,
mm-hmm.
I need Extinction Event now.
Yep.
You can't have it now, but you can have it next turn.
You can have it next turn. It's my Extinction Event, and I want it now. Right. You know? But I mean, the perfect thing is this curves right into Extinction Event, right?
Right, exactly.
This is our 3, Extinction Event on 4, this on 3, any 4-mana Wrath, right? There's plenty of 4-mana Wraths out there. You know, we did our job, right? This is an early contester to the board. This card is seemingly very, very strong. So
Painful Truth is a card that has seen play in Pioneer before and continues to see play today in Amalia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mono Black, you can't play Painful Truth because you only get to draw 1 card and lose 1 life. For 3 mana. So this is fair, I guess. But I'm not excited about this card. I'm excited that people will get to play their miserable, awful, garbage deck that beats me every time. But I'm not excited that it's going to happen.
Yeah, go Blinks there. All right, Ricky, let's go ahead and round off this episode. People, thank you again for listening. Please keep submitting cards that you want us to go over in spoiler stuff. We'll highlight our best cards, our favorite cards, I should say. But you put the ones that you might want us to cover in there. Keep hitting up the meta boot camp questions there. We've already got tons of submissions. Special shout out to Walker for giving us Patreon mailbag questions and questions in there for us to answer. Speaking of which, our Patreon mailbag question will be from one Walker. And it asks, guys, fellas, some of my friends get discouraged after a couple of RCQ losses. How do you stay positive and keep looking for the win? After a few losses.
Oh, I mean,
Ricky, I've never heard of anything like this before. Do you have any help for Walker's friend who might be
You lose all sanity and begin tracking your progress.
Yeah.
And know that, like, if given enough time and given enough goes at it, if you really want to improve and you will see the improvement. It's true that magic events create more losers than they create winners. But you're only a loser if you don't learn from the loss. I think it's really important to kind of like grow if you can't win.
Yeah.
If you won, then it means you played your line perfectly for the most part. And you really don't have anything to learn from that event. But when you lose, you can learn a lot. And I think it's important to put your ego, unfortunately, aside. It's hard to do. And go back through, see if there were places where you could have played tighter. See if maybe you lost because you just had no clue what to do with a certain matchup. Maybe you sideboarded wrong. Maybe you assessed your role in the matchup poorly. Maybe you were unaware of a deck and it caught you by surprise. Well, now we can better our understanding of the meta. We can better our understanding of various decks and cards and how they interact with ours, right? Mm-hmm. We can always be improving in some way. And I think it takes a lot to step away from the ego safety net of saying that, oh, I got varianced out. Magic is a game of variance. Like I, you know, couldn't draw the good cards. Opponent drew only good cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm not going to lie. It does happen like that sometimes. Sometimes you do get got and there was nothing you could do. But more often than not, I'm going to say that in almost 80% to 70% of your losses, there was something that went wrong on your end where you could have had a different game state at some point that increased your chance of winning that game.
Sure.
And I think it's tough, but it's important to go to these events with friends, make friends at the events, and kind of everybody work together to kind of improve as a group. It makes it easier to take those losses. It's exciting when you go to a place that is even just like an hour away from where you normally live, play some magic cards with people you don't know and people you don't know, and win or lose, go hit up some weird restaurant and tag them on Twitter and have a good time, you know?
Yeah.
This is your hobby. And you want to win and you want to improve and you want to do better, but you also want to have fun and you want to have good memories of your weekends and your free time spent with your friends.
Yeah. One thing I think also, if you can do it, if it's possible, I think avoiding some amount of social media will help. Because one thing that you'll see, unfortunately, frequently on tweeters is, oh, I showed up to an 8-person RCQ. I got 3 buys. Then my top 8 opponents all scooped to me. And here's my invite. And I feel like comparing yourself to others instead of focusing on, you know, like interpersonal relationships, like things that have actually happened in the real world, right? Your events, the reality that you face, where like you should be proud of top 8s. You know what I'm saying? You should be proud of these things. Root for your friends, right? I think these are things that the social media adds extra pressure that's nothing to do with you. And you can see that and feel discouraged when you see a bunch of people posting their pictures, right? Just like people who are like, oh, I'm in some beautiful beach area, right? That you kind of get envious of people, and that's not what you want to do. And I think it's hard to just shut that emotion out. So I think one of the best things you can do is stay off in the weeks either before or after Twitter when it comes to some of those posts, because you'll see too many people do that and like wonder why that isn't you when that's not a realistic, you know. Expectation. You know, a lot of these places are, you know, you see some of the posts and they're just ridiculous, right? They're never going to happen to you, most likely, right? They're 1 in a million type situations in small towns in the middle of nowhere. It's the only RCQ you probably had for the area or the whole state sometimes. So don't worry about those things. Like Ricky said, focus on the positives, focus on your friends, focus on those things. So that's my 2 cents there.
Right.
As always, thanks to Walk for that. Ricky, should they want to get on the tweeters and look at people who have recently won RCQs, right, where can they see you on the social media?
You can find me on Twitter @AlsoSteve, and all Steve does have a T.
Steve does have a T, huh? Okay, it's good to know. You can find me on the tweeters at @its_Christmas, and Christmas has no T on that one there. You can also find our fearless leader, Ruckman, running our main Twitter account, which I think is at Crew3 Podcast on the tweeters, streaming at Crew3MTG on Twitch, I believe. And then maybe we'll be doing some Instagram content soon, courtesy of our favorite hard metal listener, Chad, getting us inspired to do maybe some Instagram posts soon. So we'll see what happens there. As always, this show is brought to you by our wonderful supporters at Patreon. That's patreon.com/crew3mtg. You can chuck in a buck to get your name on all of our streams and videos. $5 gets you a piece of exclusive monthly content. And $15, $20 international, gets you the monthly swag bag mailing. But as always, the whole point there is just to support your boys. We appreciate all of our patrons, no matter what tier. It's a ghost show's love. Of course, you get access to the Patreon Discord channel at any tier, where you can ask us mailbag questions. And if you guys don't mind, mailbags run a little empty. Our cuppeth runneth a little emptieth.
More questions about anything.
That's exactly right. Hit us up with whatever you might want, including Shohei Ohtani questions, if you should.
If you
want to.
Yeah.
Or sports questions in general. As always, thank you guys for listening. Make sure you tune in the next couple of weeks. We've got some sweet episodes. We're excited for y'all to hear. Hopefully you like this one. Ricky, tell the people bye.
Bye, people.
Bye, people. See ya.